Welcome to today's edition of the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show podcast.
Welcome, everybody, to the second hour of the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show. This is Buck, and we promise you an update on the situation in Afghanistan and also all the efforts in the media and from the Democrats, from Biden himself, try to convince you that all that stuff you saw, all the people who were rushing the airport in a frenzy, the chaos, those grabbing on to the gears of planes as they took off from Kabul airport, the situation of the security on the ground, the lack thereof, 13 killed in a suicide bombing, 13 of our own members of the military. And the Biden administration's already talking about what a success the Afghan withdrawal was. We still have a 1,000 people, including green card holders, dozens of U.S. citizens. Yesterday, Chuck Schumer said every American who wanted to get out. That's just not true. That's a lie. But Chuck Schumer is no stranger to lies. It's really what he traffics in. But as promised, or as predicted and promised, they're already trying to tell you that they've done a great job, that this was amazing. Remember when it was a disaster that we could all see unfolding before our eyes? There were videos and photos and people were giving interviews. They were saying what a complete mess it was, how embarrassing it was for the United States to have a run for the exits, run for the lifeboats moment as we did. And yet I said it's just a matter of time before they're going to tell you this was a great success. And as if right on cue, and here's Nancy Pelosi doing just that.
The historic evacuation of 120,000 people was remarkable, and I commend the administration for that. This is never easy. That's not always complete right from the start, but it was remarkable, even though it got off to a hazy start. And now we go forward.
A hazy start, she says, Clay. I remember when Digital Dunkirk was trending, one thought I had was, yes, it was amazing that just as they had the Brits taking, you know, boats, fishing boats, pleasure craft to get their British soldiers off the north shores of France, that came after an almost mind-boggling, hard-to-fathom destruction of the military might of France and the UK at the hands of the Germans, right? This was, the evacuation came because of the disaster, but Pelosi wants you to think this was a great moment for America.
Yeah, and unfortunately, and let's say a positive story here, Dunkirk, I think now in the British mindset, is maybe the moment that Britain points to as one of the greatest, if not the greatest moments of modern British history. Because the positive there, and this is a little bit of a side, but there's a opportunity to go see some of those boats in when you get a chance to go back to London. They have incredible history museums there. And Buck, some of these boats are to even call them boats is unbelievable. Like seeing the fact that they got 4 and 5 soldiers into these little boats that they were willing to take over in the midst of all of the bombing going on by Germany and everything else. It really is, I think, a seminal moment in Western democracy.
But it was a response to unbelievable military disaster, possible eradication of the entire British army in one fell swoop.
They had an opportunity for D-Day because the British people used their own fleets to get people out. And that's the point on Afghanistan in general. If you had had an orderly withdrawal, there would have been no need to even brag about it in any respect because everybody who wanted to get out of Afghanistan would have been able to get out. And already Pelosi is trying to spin this in some way as a positive achievement by the Biden administration. And I think you're right that they're going to, as time passes, hope that this situation fades and people don't remember how much of a disaster this really was. And are they going to be successful in that? My belief is no, because this story ties into all the other Biden administration failures. And so it will be hard to stand alone when you combine it with COVID, the border, murder rates, and sundry other failures, including potentially the budget not going to be able to pass.
One of the areas that was always hardest for the corporate media to try to prop up the Obama administration in was on foreign policy, because there were all these disasters that kept unfolding. You had Syria and Libya and Iraq and ISIS and the situation in Afghanistan. Also noteworthy that the highest casualty rates the U.S. sustained in the war in Afghanistan by far occurred while Obama was in office, but there was much less talk. That was the good war, so we didn't have to. Whereas you remember during the Bush administration, everything that happened in Iraq, it was like Bush himself was responsible for every single life lost there. Very different approach to it all. But Biden was supposed to be the steady foreign policy hand of the Obama administration. That was the initial pitch. And then people just hope that he didn't say embarrassing things and was the kind of foolish uncle that everyone hides at holidays. And we saw that play out for 8 years. But there were things, there were key decisions made, you know, the pallets of cash given to Iran, the transfer of five senior Taliban members from Guantanamo Bay by the Obama administration in 2014 in exchange for Bo Bergdahl, who walked off base and just decided he was going to walk off base. And I've seen and interviewed members, you know, of units that were either that Bergdahl was either in or working alongside, who were highly critical, to say the least, of the Bo Bergdahl decision. But Clay, it's almost like we're going through this cycle here of the Obama administration foreign policy failures are being revisited on us in very clear ways. Of those, they called them the Taliban Five at the time, right, back in 2014. Four of those five members are now basically the Taliban cabinet. I mean, they're the guys that are effectively running the situation in Afghanistan. They're not quite at the very head of government, and they're not quite where Sirajuddin Haqqani, who's really number two now in the whole situation. But here's what we got. We have... The acting director of intelligence, Abdul Haq Wasiq, the acting minister of borders, Nurullah Nouri, deputy defense minister, their secretary of defense, number two, Mohammed Fazl, and acting minister of information and culture, Khairullah Khairka, not easy to say. And the fifth member of the Taliban Five, Mohammad Nabi Omari, was appointed governor of Khost in eastern Afghanistan last month. It's like the Obama administration decisions coming back to haunt us all over again.
Well, I think we're going to have to send another harshly worded letter to the Afghan government. I mean, that when I hear that, I mean, that calls for like really hard typing on the letter that we print off and send to them. We're going to be so mad when we're looking at our computer screen. Did you see also?
You're joking, Clay, and it's a worthwhile joke. They actually did. The State Department has voiced concern over the lack of female inclusion in the Taliban government.
There are 35 top government officials, and they're all male, right? And so they wrote it feels like it should be satire. Like, how do you respond to terrorists with a really harshly worded letter? But that is what we have done now in response to not having a diverse and inclusive enough government. 35 men, all of whom, by the way, are the same religious faith. It's just funny to me, like every picture that you see, like so much of what we do in this democracy on a day-to-day basis is total BS. But maybe the peak of BS is this cosmetic diversity obsession. Like every time there's a photo, it has to have, you know, like it has to be like the United Colors of Benetton back in the day. Like the ad has to be like, has to have 12% Asian inclusion. It has to have like, you know, and then you look at the Taliban and they just got 35 bearded Islamic fundamentalists that represent the government, and we're going to write them a mean letter. Then that's going to somehow have some impact on them. Like they care about any of this.
Well, also, this is an area where we're going to say that, you know, international opinion and the Taliban's going to say, really? Well, I mean, I'm just telling you, we know what the response is going to be when we try to have. First of all, we're not going to pressure them in any meaningful way. We all know this. I mean, Blinken is like the dean in the high school that none of the kids listen to, you know?
Yes.
He's like, you know, slow down in the hallways. And people are just throwing spitballs at him and nobody cares.
Where's your hall pass, kids?
Yeah. And you know, we see the Taliban right now already understanding the leverage that they have as they're not allowing 1,000 people. And there's also reports that the State Department, our State Department, has blocked private flights from getting out or landing in ways that, you know, just boggle the mind. but the Taliban, I'm pretty sure they're not going to care. And if about our strongly worded letters on their lack of diversity and inclusion. And beyond that, I mean, they have an actual war criminal as one of their cabinet members. I mean, a true document. The guy went in and wiped out whole villages of Hazara, who were an ethnic minority in a Shia minority inside of Afghanistan. And Clay, they're going to say, well, America does business with Saudi Arabia. You know, America does business with China, which operates concentration camps. They're going to go and say this stuff at the UN. And you know what? At some level, it's true. And they're just going to divert from the fact that, yeah, we've got a country that's run by barbarians that we've been at war with for 20 years. And that's the reality.
And also, this just brings back the ultimate reality, which is sternly worded letters. We are running a country like Twitter. And what I mean by that is words matter on Twitter. Somebody says something somebody else doesn't like, and it's like, oh my God, we've got to cancel that person. Did you see what they said about whatever topic, right? It doesn't matter what the topic is. They made a joke I don't like. Let's stone them. Let's deride them with righteous and furious anger. And that works for the Democratic Party in America. They have turned Twitter into an arm of the Democratic Party. It doesn't work with actual terrorists. And there's a huge percentage of Americans that don't know what actual evil is. They think like Target mixing boys and girls toys together is evil, right? Not mixing them together. Like they have it. Target has a whole aisle that's just girl toys, and they have an aisle that's just boy toys. And like that's the things that our Americans are obsessed with on a day-to-day basis. And meanwhile, Afghanistan is stoning people, right? And what do you think the impact's going to be when our hypersensitive, perpetually offended culture tries to have any impact in Afghanistan? Those dudes are just going to walk up and smack us in the face. By the way, they respect power and authority.
We're not even really going to try. I mean, this is the other part of this, too. I think everyone realizes that there'll be some people that make a little bit of noise. But the left in this country doesn't even really believe that there are foreign enemies. The only enemies are domestic. The only enemies are Trump voters that are in opposition to the power that they want here at home. So while they'll do strongly worded letters about the Taliban, they'll try to lock up insurrectionists here for, you know, attempted overthrow of the government when you had a lot of people who are taking selfies and walking around and, you know, whatever.
Grandmas.
We'll come back into that in a few moments. We've also got a lot of people that I know still want to weigh in about the satire issue and whatever happened to comedy. I think it's pretty clear the left will say, oh, but all the comedians are left wing. Right. The same reason all the professors are left wing, because they can't tolerate other people and they act like the spoiled children at the high school lunch table who won't allow anyone else to sit with them. So that's how that goes. We'll come back into some of that, though, in a moment. But Clay, we got just a few days here before the 20th anniversary of 9/11. And right now, Frank Siller, who's the chairman and CEO of the Tunnel to Towers Foundation, is making his way across six states. This has been going on for 6 weeks by foot. Frank connects the 9/11 sites, Pentagon, Shanksville, and Ground Zero in his more than 500-mile tribute to the fallen. His journey ends this Saturday morning on 9/11 when he takes the final steps his baby brother took 20 years ago from the tunnel in downtown New York City to the towers where he gave his life, Clay, saving others.
Yeah, and this 20th anniversary year, Tunnel to Towers is also giving 200 mortgage-free homes to America's heroes and their families. September 12th, the foundation is going to have a ceremony to say out loud the names of the many people who died from 9/11-related illnesses since that day. You won't believe how many more people we've lost to illnesses from that toxic dust, and over 100,000 more suffering with those illnesses today. Never forget, you can donate $11 a month to Tunnel to Towers at t2t.org. Again, $11 a month as the 20th anniversary nears of 9/11. Never forget and donate at t2t.org. Welcome back in. Clay Travis, Buck Sexton Show. Appreciate all of you hanging out with us as we roll through the program. Buck, I wanted to make sure we hit on this, because if this had happened with the January 6th riot, if Donald Trump had raised money for people who were arrested on January 6th, and one of the guys that he had raised money for got out on bail and then got accused of murder, this would be the number one story everywhere. Well, you'll recall that Kamala Harris backed a bail fund surrounding all of the Minnesota riots, and they helped get an alleged Minneapolis domestic abuser off of out of jail, pay bail. This guy, George Howard, 47 years old, he had been arrested due to his behavior in the riots. And Kamala Harris said, hey, we need a Minnesota Freedom Fund. We want to bring in as much money as possible. And they brought in the money to get this guy out of jail, given his charges. Well, he has now been arrested and charged with two counts of second-degree murder for allegedly shooting Luis Damian Martinez Ortiz during a road rage incident in Minneapolis on August the 29th. Buck, Kamala Harris got this guy out of jail, helped to raise money to ensure that he was not held accountable for his violent behavior in the wake of the George Floyd incident, and now this guy has committed murder. Can you imagine the reaction in the media if one of the January 6th perpetrators, who's been arrested, Trump helped get them out on bail, and then they committed a murder?
I'm pretty sure the media will be talking about it a whole lot more than they're talking about this. That's
this thing
sure.
is hardly this getting is, any attention. I mean,
what you see is Kamala right now is on this mission to try to keep Gavin Newsom in the governor's role. So that's what she's going out to California. I don't think she'll be very effective there either. She's a machine politician. There's not a lot of inspiration that anyone, including the residents of California, are going to take from Kamala Harris. But I think it's also worth noting that you have the sitting vice president of the United States was advocating to raise money for people who were guilty of rioting, right? I mean, yes. This is actually, they act like the bail fund was for people who were, you know, who were prisoners of conscience or something or wrongfully accused. No, they rioted. They deserve to be held in jail. They deserve to be criminally charged. But remember, riots that Democrats like, as long as there's a BLM banner involved, that's okay.
Yeah, let me just fix this, by the way, clean up a little bit. What is going on here is he was arrested for having a firearm, and they put up $11,500 bond in a domestic assault case. I guess the Freedom Fund still has money left over from all the people they were bailing out, so they're continuing to bail people out who otherwise might not be able to, all funded by Kamala Harris's group. But according to this story, it makes it honestly even worse because he was in for a domestic assault case. Like, why is the fund helping people who are accused of domestic assault out of jail in the first place? Regardless, I think almost everybody out there would sit back and say, hey, maybe some of these guys that are accused of violent crimes should maybe stay in jail. We shouldn't let him back out.
The no bail changes made in New York, Clay. Everyone I talk to, the NYPD, everyone in law enforcement here says, resulted in more violence, resulted in bad things.
No doubt. It's a huge issue. You know what's also a huge issue? Everybody being able to follow you around online and know exactly where you've been and be able to sell your data. That's why you need your own opportunity to get a VPN, and you need to get hooked up with our friends at ExpressVPN. It is a virtual private network, works on all devices, phones, laptops, desktops, tablets. All you have to do is download the ExpressVPN app, create a secure account, and from there, you just fire up the app, click one button to get protected. This protects you from a hacker on the same network that wants to steal your personal data. That way, they cannot get access to you. How do you do this? Do what Buck and I have done and go to expressvpn.com/Clay and Buck. That's expressvpn.com/Clay and Buck. Extra 3 months free. expressvpn.com/Clay and Buck.
Thanks for rolling along with us here on the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show. This is Buck, and I've been saying really from the beginning of the pandemic that if you understand Alinsky, if you understand community organizing and mass mobilization, largely through symbols and propaganda, you would see that COVID is just like an authoritarian's dream, right? Now, all of a sudden, everything that you do, anything you want to do, you can put through the lens of, well, we better do this or else there's going to be some kind of a health implication, or there's no aspect of your life that can't be engineered under the guise of protecting you from COVID. I mean, just see this with the rent
moratorium that they went with. All of a sudden, the CDC, Democrats believe very firmly, and for a long time they got away with this. The CDC could say, yeah, you're not allowed to actually enforce the contract you have with someone who's renting a home from you. And there are some landlords that I believe have been turned homeless by this policy because the renter, they were relying on that rent to pay their own bills, and they ended up being homeless themselves and couldn't go to the home they owned that was being rented to somebody, of course, because they couldn't evict them. But we've seen a lot of this. Once you understand the mentality of the left and how Alinskyite mass mobilization works, you know, once you've got people energized on one area in one way, it's much easier to move them on to something else. So when you have them mobilized against corruption, then you can move them to pollution. When you have them mobilized against, you know, capitalism, you can then move them on to whatever else comes to mind for you. And climate change is, I mean, Clay and I were just having a discussion about how I think an emotionally healthy, normal, rational person spends exactly 0 seconds of their life worried about climate change. I believe that this is a religious belief for people who think they're too smart for a religion, Clay. So let's just first establish it's not like other issues where, you know, income inequality. Yeah, I can see some, you know, sometimes private equity does lever up companies and destroy them and take a whole lot of working class people and put them out of jobs. Like, there can be back and forth on these issues. You worry about climate change, zero. I worry about it, zero.
I worry about it, zero. I mean, honestly, I mean, there are so many things going on in my life on a day-to-day basis. And some people say, well, I don't worry about it for myself. I worry about it for my kids or my grandkids. I spend zero time worrying about climate change for my kids and my grandkids, too. And it's obviously not because I don't care about my kids or hopefully someday grandkids that I would have. It's because there are a billion other things going on that I'm more concerned about that are more directly related to things that I believe humans can have an impact on. And so I like every time there is a climate change topic. And by the way, I think I'm the vast majority of the American public, right? I think the vast majority of the American public, so busy on a day-to-day basis, got kids that you're worried about, jobs that you're worried about, parents to take care of, family members, all these other things going on. I don't think very many people are worried about climate change. I will say
by the polling totally backs you up on that. Just that's clear. But, you know, the Bolsheviks were never a majority either. Right.
Yeah.
So it doesn't.
And so that what has changed and pivoted in a big way is every time there is a flood now, every time there is a hurricane, which, by the way, floods and hurricanes have been happening my entire life. I'm 42.
I think there's some stuff in the Bible about floods and things.
I think there might have even been in biblical times floods. I understand that people who are smarter than me and go back and look through like the eons of sediment and look at where exactly water levels have been, they have fluctuated a great deal over the decades. I'm not worried about it at all.
Well, the Democrats are severely worried about it.
And what has changed, Buck, is now we get direct, overt blaming of climate change for any climate-related issue. And that did not happen a decade ago. It certainly didn't happen 20 years ago.
Fires in California, hurricanes hitting the southeastern United States, tornadoes in the Midwest, a freak storm in New York City, whatever it may be. You're right. All of a sudden, there's this, it's almost like an emotional manipulation and blackmail that goes on where Joe Biden shows up and goes, you know, if we don't deal with this, it's existential. And he does this whole thing. In fact, here he is making the pitch right after we just got hit with some storms. Here's Joe Biden talking about how we need to take action.
Climate change poses an existential threat to our lives, to our economy, and the threat is here. It's not going to get any better. The question, can it get worse? We can stop it from getting worse.
That's right.
And when I talk about building back better, and Chuck is fighting for my program, our program on the Hill, when I talk about building back better, I mean you can't build to what it was before this last storm. You got to build better so if the storm occurred again, there would be no damage. There would be. But that's not going to stop us, though, because if we just do that, it's just going to get worse and worse and worse, because the storms are going to get worse and worse and worse. And so, folks, we got to listen to the scientists.
Clay, I mean, this is gibberish. If you weren't the president of the United States, I mean, if you were sitting on a bar stool muttering about the existential threat and all this stuff, you'd think this guy needed professional help.
It's such a good point. Take the fact that all these microphones are out there, and just that's a great analogy. Like, if you were sitting in a bar and Joe Biden sidled up to you, and let's pretend we're dudes and he's not girls trying to smell our hair and touch us inappropriately. But let's pretend it's me or you, Buck. And He might still try to sniff my hair.
Yours probably, too.
Yeah, we do have good hair. But so let's pretend we get past the hair sniffing and we're like just kind of hanging out with Joe. Would you in any way consider his opinion at all to be remotely valid? Or would you be like, of all the people at bar could sit next to me, I got to have this dude sit next to me? I mean, he sounds like he is basically drunk every single time that he is talking now. He's meandering. He's not making sense. There's no logical connection to what he's trying to say. And it's disappointing. Look, I always say I don't want the country to be led by a laughingstock, regardless of what your own political beliefs are. We're led by a laughingstock right now. This guy's a joke.
I wouldn't hire Joe Biden to be a one-day substitute teacher for an eighth-grade English composition class. And I mean that. I mean, I really would say I don't think this guy could cut it. I think the kids would be getting, you know, they'd be getting shortchanged on this one. And yet he's the leader of the free world. By the way, to our point about the nonsense that Biden spews, here you go.
We are determined that we are going to deal with climate change and have zero emissions, net emissions by 2050. By 2020, make sure all our electricity is zero emissions.
I mean, okay, they'll say he misspoke or whatever, but he misspeaks and then doesn't correct it, right? I mean, how can you say out loud zero emissions by last year and not go, I meant? If he had said, I meant, I misspeak sometimes, you misspeak sometimes, we speak for 3 hours a day extemporaneously, but there's something not right with this guy, Clay. A lot of things, actually.
That's exactly what I was going to say. You and I sometimes don't get every word perfect on the radio show. We don't have a script to read from, and we're doing live radio every day. Here's a good question. You said you wouldn't hire him to do to be like an eighth grade substitute teacher, which I think is a great question. I wouldn't hire him to work at Outkick. We're in the process of hiring a lot of people. There's nothing that I could hire him to do at my company, and he's the leader of the free world. I wouldn't trust him to be able to do it. Buck, what if Joe Biden had to sit down in front of our mic and talk to our audience for 3 hours like we do? There's no way on earth that Joe Biden could do our job. There's no possibility that he... In fact, if he sat down and tried to talk to our audience for 3 hours,
We'd have to invoke the mercy rule. I mean, I would be embarrassed. I'd feel bad. I'd throw a blanket around his shoulders and want to get him to some apple juice as soon as possible because it's clear he couldn't do it. And Clay, I don't think that's an unfair thing to bring up because they were calling for the 25th Amendment to be used against Donald Trump.
Yes.
Who would stand up at rallies and put on extemporaneously, which you and I appreciate a lot because we're just rolling here, folks. We're just doing our thing and just, you know, going off what's at the top of our minds. He put on the greatest political show on earth off the top of his head.
Well, and we're going to go down to Mar-a-Lago sooner rather than later, hopefully, and we'll offer Trump the opportunity to be on with us for 3 hours. By the way, I'd offer Joe Biden the opportunity to be on with us for 3 hours. I think it would be the single worst decision that the Biden administration could make to put him on with us for 3 hours. But I think everybody out there listening
for 3 minutes first, but three hours would be fun too.
Let me talk to you a minute here about our friends at Legacy Box. Look, there are so many people out there that are forgetting about their memories, or you got that thought in the back of your head where you're like, hey, remember those great photos? Remember those great slides? How about those old VHS tapes? And you want to make sure that they are digitized forever, but you never get around to it. How about it? 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago, you need to make sure that your family has this for years to come. And we got to tell you about Legacy Box being able to take care of you. They have an incredible deal right now, Buck. I know you've taken advantage of it. Our listeners need to take advantage of it, too.
I got to start putting up all the digitized photos on clayandbuck.com, Clay, because
that's a great idea.
On a little thumb drive now. It's so easy because I sent in my Legacy Box and it was just the most seamless, straightforward and trusting procedure. You put all your stuff in there. They send it right back to you. It's all just done with so much care. This week, Legacy Box is offering 50% off. It's a great deal. 50% off at legacybox.com/buck. so that you share those memories with the whole family. Their service couldn't be any simpler. They use their kit, the box they'll send you, to safely send the moments you want preserved. Their team will create a digital archive by hand. Then you get your new digital file with a link to a computer file stored in the cloud or a thumb drive. That's what I did. I went thumb drive because it's so easy. It's tiny, but you could also put it on a DVD. Visit legacybox.com/buck. Take advantage of this offer for 50% off. 50% off. That's right. Go right now. Legacybox.com/buck. Save 50% off. You can use the kit whenever you're ready. There's no rush on it, but you get the 50% discount if you go now. Legacybox.com/buck.
Welcome back, Adam. Closing out hour number two, Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show. We got a lot of you who wanted to weigh in so far on the show. We have not taken any calls yet. Let's go to take some of these calls. Phil in Charleston, South Carolina. What you got for us, Phil?
Clay and Buck, this is a special moment for me. Thank you very much for putting me on. And love the show so far. You guys are doing a great job.
Appreciate that.
With one exception, Buck. And I hate to be the guy that has to call you out the first time I get to speak to you. But when you're talking about the late night entertainers and the comedy, and you threw out there's one person who started the whole thing out, and you threw Jon Stewart in the mix, when you are sitting behind the golden UIB microphone.
Well, we were talking about, you're misunderstanding,
sir, with respect. I said Jon Stewart started the use of comedy as a propaganda weapon in politics for the left. I was only talking about leftists who were, like, doing that.
On television, too. Thanks for the call. But the argument is, and I think it's a good one, for those of you who were not aware, we were talking about the degree to which politics has infected humor. And if you were someone who watched late night television back in the day, Johnny Carson, David Letterman, and Jay Leno, you didn't really have a sense for their political leanings because they took shots in equal directions. And we pointed out that Stephen Colbert during the Trump administration went all in on Trump ridicule. And then, Buck, you pointed out that the first person to really do it on television from a humor perspective was Jon Stewart going from one side, right?
Because the guy before him, Craig Kilborn, also had that same platform.
That's right.
But it was more of a like making just jokes about the news. Jon Stewart turned it into editorials that the DNC likes that are funny, which is a different thing. That's a different approach
from the radio perspective. Rush invented a brand new way to speak to the audience. And we appreciate that call, but the difference is that perspective didn't exist. We all know that Rush created political talk radio as it exists in any way. I mean, everybody, Sean Hannity, who's going to be on after us, Glenn Beck, who's on right before us, no one would exist in the political speech arena of radio if Rush hadn't proven how successful it could be in the first place. But from a television perspective, it's totally different.
Yeah. Yeah. Gloria in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. Hello.
The consummate late-night entertainer was by far a class act, Johnny Carson. If I could watch his reruns, even now, I would be watching them, and I would go back to late-night TV. I don't watch it. It's not funny. I don't need more political speak at that time of night. So, anyway, love your show.
Thank you, Gloria.
We appreciate it.
Thank you so much for calling in.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of people of that perspective. And honestly, it's kind of what happened with sports too, right? It used to be an escape. It's kind of a place where at the end of the day, you've had serious things happen. You want to have a beer. You want to kick your feet up. And then you get this strident, political angled one direction. And I think that's why, frankly, it's collapsed.
Even video games now have become the site of controversy over wokeness and... You know, I remember during the pandemic when I went into a video game phase because, you know, what else are you going to do in lockdown New York City by yourself? There was, one of the Viking, Assassin's Creed games. The beginning, this was created by a diverse group of people from like multiple, you know, sexual and identity perspectives and all. And I was like, we're talking about Viking. Like, what is this?
It's a video game. I really don't care who made it.
Yeah.
One of my buddies,
Joel,
by the way,
what do you got?
How's it going, you guys?
We're good, man. Thank you for calling.
Excellent.
Yeah, so I want to throw out a few names out there. Steven Crowder, who just came back from his recovering from surgery, so I want to bring his name up to awareness.
Great also guy who's Rachel. Built a fantastic audience by doing really good work online. Totally agree. Go ahead, Joel.
And Alfonso Rachel, he does a little bit of a commentary on the internet. I think you're discounting so many of the original creators that are on the net. There's also Michael Loftus, as well as British Fantasy, as well as
I appreciate all these names.
None of them are getting paid $30 million to do an audience of millions of people every night by like Disney or one of the biggest media corporations in the world. That's the point.
My kids love YouTube. There is still a big difference between late night broadcast television humor and what is going on YouTube. By the way, this is a strong argument. I think Russ still there in Lexington argues that yes, the left has ruined comedy. Well, they ruin everything.
Here we go, Russ. Let's hear Russ say it.
Yeah.
Hey guys, thanks for carrying the EIB torch along.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Yeah, I think the question that Clay asked about whether the left has ruined comedy, I think absolutely true. But I think the bigger question is, what aspect of American life has the left not ruined? I mean, they destroy everything, and I mean everything they touch.
It is a fascinating question. Thank you for the call. It's a great point, Russ. When we come back, speaking of destroying things, Joe Rogan's talking about trying to destroy CNN. You see this story they accused him?
Destroy CNN. It'd be a good day for America.
Their ratings are destroyed. We had an article up at Outkick. My guy Bobby Barak looked at it. They can barely get 1 million people to watch their programming now. And Joe Rogan's talking about suing them. What for? We'll tell you about that to start off the third hour.
And AOC really wants to speak out in favor of the rights of menstruating and birthing people of America and the world. Menstruating people unite.
You're listening to Clay Travis and Buck Sexton on the EIB Network.